Okay. So we were on trees, and we've seen that trees are just a specific case of networks where you have when you have no cycles, in fact. And then since you have no cycle, you can define a hierarchy, and it gives you another attribute which is implicit with the topology of the tree, which is the depth of the nodes. So there are tasks related especially to that particularity. Okay, and then we have seen a first family of representation for trees, which are node link diagrams, which is the more usual representation for trees. So I will skip that. We have seen that interaction can help to face the main problem of hierarchical data, which is the fact that usually the number of leaves grows and can grow exponentially with the depth of the tree, because if each node has two children, then at each level you will double the number of leaves. That's an exponential growth, right? So there are ways to cope with that, but there's no magic solution. At some point, you have a limited number of pixels on screen, so you can have some tricks to do as if you have more space. For example, a hyperbolic tree does the layout in an infinite space and then map this space to a unit circle, but that's cheating since you have a infinite space but with infinite small pixels on the border of the circle. And then we ended with this iconic example of tree visualization, which is cone trees. And I presented that because that's probably the most cited paper on information visualization, the information visualization field. I gave you my analysis. It's one of the most cited papers because when people want to say that information in visualization is it's something important or something, and they want to give an example of information visualization without caring about the specific example, people use this one. And that's because it was one of the first use of 3D in information visualization, right? And the paper has nice figures. And at that time, it was not that common. But if you try the system, you will find out that it's barely usable, in fact, and because you have occlusion between the elements in 3D there, because the interaction, you still use a 2D interaction with your mouse, and you point pixels on screen. So when you have elements in the background, it's very hard to reach them. So that's a counter example. It can seem interesting or appealing because that the demo effect where you oh wow, that's cool, but in fact being cool is not enough. In fact, it's cool but it's inefficient, right? So that's one caveat that we we have to face when designing visualization. We may be tempted to design a cool visualization or nice looking visualization, but we have to keep in mind that often having efficient visualization is not about having something nice or nice looking or impressive. Often it's having things simple, and you have to be aware of that. Right. And then we just have to finish with the next family of tree representation, which is the nested layout. And in fact, we've already seen one example of that with the zoomable tree maps that I showed you earlier as an example of how interaction can help visualization, right? And if we get back to the origin of tree maps, we have to go back to so this paper is from 2002, but in fact it's not the original paper on tree maps. So tree maps are dates back are older than that, and but the illustration there gives you the idea, and the idea that to represent hierarchy, instead of using links to show the connection between a node and its parent, the tree maps will use an enclosure. So the general form for tree maps is that if you have a node, then you will depict nodes as areas. So that's interesting because you can use graphic variables. You can use the color, of course, but you could can think of using the size. You can think of using the shape. You can think of using any of the many graphic variables, right? And so to denote that D and E are children of C, we'll enclose them into the C node, right? And then we have node B, so I can put it, the B node there. And then both of them are enclosed in A, okay? So we have node link, nested layout. And then, as you can expect, there are many variations because you can, even if you just use rectangles, you can choose to split one node horizontally or vertically and so on. There are many variation on that. And you can also choose to use other forms than rectangles. For example, there are tree maps using circles. So you will have things like that, D, E, and then they would be enclosed into a circle, C, then another circle, B. So that's an example where the aesthetical part, so some people find it more appealing to have circles than rectangles. But one of the interesting properties of tree maps is that you have areas, and then the area of a node, for example, if you look at the area of A, if you use rectangles, it's roughly the sum of the area of let it that be a small c, and with c in the children of A. Okay. So that's roughly, you have something that you can sum up along the path of a node, right? And this property is interesting if you have some attribute in your tree that you have on the leaves that's additive in the tree. For example, if you have a hierarchy of files in a file system, the size of folder is the sum of the size of the children of the folder. That's an interesting way to represent such hierarchies where you have such attribute, because then the size of a node will be proportional to its this additive attribute, right? And then if you use circles, then you quite lose this property, because then you will have an empty space, and the size of the empty space is not something that you can adjust really easily. Of course, in rectangles, if you want this to be exact, then you have to not use margins. If you had margins, then you have the same problem than with circles. But it's not that bad, because the space that you lose with the margin is more easy to control in a rectangle than in circles. I won't go into that, but it's easier to control that. Some people worked on providing layouts without margins. We'll see some examples of that. Right? Yeah, so that's for an introduction to nested layout. So the original algorithm for tree maps is what is called a slice and dice. And the idea is that you have a rectangle for the root of the tree, and then you go to the first level and you slice your area horizontally or vertically. And then for the second level, you slice it in the other direction, and so on. And this algorithm is really simple, but it produces really elongated rectangles. And then when you slice those rectangles, it's really hard to read labels. But it's also really hard to compare one of the problem with that with this algorithm. So it's called slice and dice. One of the problem with this original algorithm is that it's really hard to compare areas. So we have seen that one of the interesting thing of tree maps is that you can use area as a graphical variable. And then when you use a graphical variable, you expect to be able to make some comparison, remember? And the size is something really powerful, because you have something under, that you can tell, you should be able to tell if not only if it's the order, if it's bigger or smaller, but also how many times bigger it is. And in fact, there have been experiments where people were asked to compare or to estimate relative sizes of rectangles, but rectangles with different aspect ratios. So if you want to compare the area of this rectangle to the area of that rectangle, in fact, it's a task where we are not very good. And the more the aspect ratio is far from being one, means the more flat the rectangle is, the less square it is, the less we are able to compare rectangles, the area of rectangles. So it led to the search for algorithm other than slice and dice, where the layout would produce rectangles that are more close to squares than to flat rectangles. Okay. So tree maps, the encoding vertices are encoded as areas, and edges are enclosures. Okay. And one of the main challenges is how to lay out the nodes to make the hierarchy understandable. So one of the problems is to have those rectangles that are more square, but also that if you don't put margins, because you if you put margins, you will lose some space. So the more leaves you have in your tree and the more pixels you will use just for margins. And if you remove margins, then it will be really hard to understand the hierarchy in the tree. So we'll show you some responses to that. So first on the layout, so this one is the original slice and dice. And in a subsequent world, a work by so I didn't tell, but the tree maps, the first papers are by Ben Bederson, that he was and he's still in the human-computer interaction lab at the University of Maryland, the team founded by Ben Schneiderman, so that the same man has a lot of things, and. At that time, they worked with Mark Wattenberg, who is now a well-known data analyst. And at that time, he was an intern or PhD, I don't remember exactly. And then they worked on different layouts. And one of the possibility, so that's examples from the paper, there are ordered tree map layouts, because one of the early proposed way to have a node that are more square was to sort children according to their size, and then to first pack the largest nodes, so for example in a slice, and then if you you look at if you add another node to this slice, whether it will make the aspect ratio better or worse than before, and then you do some slice in the other side, so you start the layout. So that's a layout for one level, when you first cut a slice like that, and then cut a slice like that, and so on. And that's a way to have nodes with a reasonable aspect ratio. But if you do that, you sort the children from largest to smallest, and tree maps can be used for to show data that vary over time. So, for example, so Mark Wattenberg is well known for having done the visualization which is called the map of the market, where the tree map represent the variation of the stock market, and every day the size of the node can change, and if you you use a layout where the order depends on the data, then when they are when the data changes, the layout will change, but it can change drastically, because you can have nodes that will jump from one place to another. So in this paper, they try to find layouts where you can have a kind of order that is preserved that does not depend on the data. So you choose an a priori order, for example, an alphabetical order or something, and that order won't change. And you want to have the children laid out so that you can start from one part of the visualization and then be sure to have this order almost fulfilled by the layout, while still being able to produce some square or squarish nodes. Right. So it's quite tricky. I won't go into details there because we don't have time to look at all the answers to those problems. But I just wanted to explain the problems that have been addressed by different research papers. So in this paper, they found some solution. And again, that's the kind of topic that generated quite long list of papers, because this problem is interesting and there are many solutions to that and with various trade-offs. So people kept on proposing different solutions to that problem. So that's the example that we saw earlier on how interaction can help to make the tree maps scale with large data sets. But what I wanted to show there is that it's not obvious, but you can make the picture bigger there. Here we have no margin in the picture. We have a border, but in this example, the border could be removed. And so that's a way to address the question of how can we see the hierarchy without relying on margins. And there have been paper on that. And in fact, you may not notice it at first glance, but the nodes here are filled with a gradient of gray that goes from light to dark there. And in fact, each rectangle is filled with the same gradient, and they are accumulated. And that makes it at the boundary between the different levels, you always have a step in value. And the magnitude of the step in values, so in the gray level, tells you at which level in the hierarchy this border exists. So the difference between the grays on those two nodes there is lighter than the difference between those two nodes there, because those two nodes are higher in the hierarchy. So with using a filling of the rectangle with a gradient makes you make the visual enables to perceive some depth in the visualization. And again, there is a whole literature on that. I should add I will add the reference in the slide, and I will upload a new version of the slide soon, right? And there is a whole literature on how you can use some strategies for the filling of the rectangle, so that it's easier to perceive the borders between the levels. And then since you are only using the gray levels, you can also use the color if you want to encode some of the attributes. But the gray levels can be accumulated using transparency. So you can use the shading to give hints about the structure. But for the color, if you accumulate color along a hierarchy, then you will have a mess. So usually color is only used on the leaves or on one specific level of the hierarchy. So that's the case, for example, in the first example there of tree map. This tree map shows a file system. Here, I think. Then you have the name of the files, and the color gives you so there is a legend there. The color gives you the type of the file. So yellow is unknown, green is text, and so on. Red is system, and so on. And then, as with the graphs where we had node links representation and adjacency matrices representation, and people had the idea to mix both representation to keep the best of them, people studied how node links and a nested layout can be mixed to see if we can find out interesting visualization. So in this case, that's one paper about this subject, which is called elastic hierarchies. And here you have three different representation for the same tree. So that's the same tree shown there. It's a synthetic data set where you have at first level, you have the root, and then you have three children that have the same structure with then sub-children and so on with the exact same distribution of children. Then you have tree map with the tree, the three children there, and the nodes that are highlighted on the left on each figure are the same. So here we have some leaves that are highlighted in blue, and they are highlighted there. And then the parent is highlighted in purple, so that the parent there, that's the same tree. And then we have the three children that are circled in black. There. Okay. And the idea of elastic hierarchy is to mix those two things. Here at the first level, we have a node link representation. So we have the three main part of the tree, the three branches. And then if you are interested in those specific nodes, since those trees are really large, they are encoded using tree maps, except for the part where the focus is, where the tree map is manifold there. And then in the end, the final nodes are shown as node link trees. And in fact, the paper goes further because the idea is a lot of possibilities. There are many. Since we have a tree where you have an exponential number of nodes, if you for each node you have to choose whether you will show this node as a tree map or as a node link, then you see that the combination is very large for that. So in the paper, they look at different strategies, some automatic strategies to find a good way to open a tree map, to just let some branches as a node link in a tree map. And they also explore some interactive ways to decide, to let the user decide which parts are shown using which technique. So I will show you the video for this technique.
Two common representations for trees are node link diagrams and tree maps. Node link diagrams are familiar to users and are appropriate for showing the shape and structure of a tree. Tree maps are more space efficient and are good at giving an overview of very large trees. This work investigates hybrid representations that combine the node link and tree map style at different places in a single tree. An exploration of the design space involving these combinations revealed several potentially useful possibilities. A software prototype implements the three most promising of these.
Okay, so they looked at different possibilities, either putting the trees inside the tree map or having the tree as a link, so the node link as a link to be able to put some other visualization outside.
And so. Goal is to allow the user to flexibly change the representation of a tree at any node, hence the name Elastic Hierarchies. Here we have a tree of 1,000 nodes. On the right, we see a node link diagram showing the root of the tree and its six children. On the left is a tree map overview of the same tree within which we
see. In this case, we have two visualizations for the same tree, right? Here we have the node link, which is collapsed with nodes collapsed, and then you can open them using interaction. And then we have a tree map. So here we have the root, right? And then we have six children, and that's the six children there. So you can see that obviously tree maps gives you more information about what we have in nodes that are collapsed there. Right?
The six subtrees under the root. The space allotted to the overview can be changed, causing the tree map layout to be adjusted. A rubber band indicates that the root node on the right corresponds to the entire tree map on the left. Notice that the view of the same tree rubber band now connects that node to the corresponding map layout to be adjusted. A rubber band indicates that the root node on the right corresponds to the entire tree map on the left. We can expand a node, and the rubber band now connects that node to the corresponding tree map node on the left. If we expand more nodes, in this case, the tree is too large to fit in the viewport. Scrolling allows us to only see a portion of the tree at a time, and zooming out makes it difficult to see the individual nodes or to read their labels. The tree map on the left, however, provides a more informative and space-efficient overview of the entire tree. Now, on the right, we see a hybrid representation. The layout algorithm automatically chose to show five of the six subtrees under the root as tree maps. The remaining subtree is small enough that it is shown initially in node link form. We can toggle any of the tree map nodes back to a node link form and expand them. Notice that the subtrees shown as tree maps on the right have the same aspect ratio as the matching tree map nodes on the left. To make it easier to see the correspondence between the two views, users can resize a tree map node by dragging the bottom right corner of the node, during which the tree layout is automatically adjusted. This allows users to examine the content of a tree map in more detail and to select nodes within it more easily. Selection within.
Okay, I will skip to the end.
Selecting a node transforms it into a subtree extending.
just so that you understand the numbers here, with the numbers here, you can choose the depth at which you have the details in the tree.
By extracting a sequence of subtrees, the user can drill down a path. Each subtree that is extracted focuses in on a lower part of the path and provides surrounding context for the next level while still fitting in the viewport.
Okay. So as you see, again, it may not seem obvious when you just see the video, but using it should make it easier to understand. So in this case, what is interesting again is that interaction can be used. You have some automatic configuration in the beginning, and to conclude on that, a last paper. From DAO and the Michael McGuffin was supervising a student DAO, and Michael McGuffin is a guy that also worked on NodeLink. You remember the combination of matrices and graph representation, the link representation. And later on, after working on that, Michael McGuffin tried to find a way to quantify a way to have metrics to tell if one representation for trees is better than another, right? And that's the last paper I will talk about, and I added it on the website as a reading. So I will ask you to read this paper. I find it quite interesting because rather than relying on just observation or try to find some general way to tell if one representation is better than another. And for that, and so the figure there is not that easy to read. He looked at many different ways to encode trees. So you have various node links visualization, but you have also some nested visualization and some combination of them. And then he gave some metrics, and those metrics, in fact, look at various things. Among them, how the visualization is space efficient. It means, does it lose space with empty space? For example, when you have some non-link representation, when you are toward the root of the tree, since you have only a single root, obviously the density of information on the upper part of the graph is quite low. And on the opposite, when you go toward the leaves, then you are in need of space. So he tries to quantify that, to give a metric that will tell if you are wasting space or if you are short of space to place the nodes. And he also considers something which is practical, which is, you need to have labels in the tree. You can do some layouts just with the topology, but usually you need to place some labels in the visualization. And some of the visualization are more It's more easy to put some labels if you have, for example, rectangles, and the rectangles which are a bit elongated, because then you can put text in them. But if you have nodes that are circles, then it's really difficult to put a label in inside circles. So we also look at how efficient the visualization are when you have to put a label in. And then, given those metrics, you can make your choice and decide which visualization is better. And even you can make some local choices and to tell if some part of your tree, if some visualization is better for some part of the tree. So you will have to read this paper. You can skip the technical part, the mathematical formulas, but still I find it interesting to see how a general problem like how do I choose a layout for the tree can be somehow reduced to some metrics that are meaningful, and then to have something operational, something that you can use to make your choice. So that's it for the lecture. I will just show you to finish. Remember, I have to switch again. You remember in the first part of the lecture, I've shown you websites that were listing visualization techniques. I'm back there. One of them was this one, tree visualization reference. Okay, so in this, remember the you had this categorization, and there you have a visualization using node link representation. There you have visualization using nested layouts, and there you have a hybrid layout. So you can have a look at that, so that the paper elastic hierarchies. But there are other examples, and you can have a look at those examples. So some are in 3D, some are in 2D. You can have a look at that. And for example, if you look at a node links layout, remember I just told you about the slice and dice and ordered layouts. But in fact, there are many, many layouts that you can that you may want to use, and they have all different trade-off between whether the part in the visualization are square or not, or whether if it's easy to see the hierarchy or not, and so on. So that's a large source of inspiration if you need to show some hierarchical data. Right, so that's it for today, and we'll end with that. And so now we can go to questions about the project, and more importantly about the exam, if you want. So I will switch again. Screens, where am I? Okay, there. I will.
Professor?
Yes.
I did a question about the project because I did a notebook, for example, Python, and you said in one class that we should document this notebook, but I don't understand how document. What did you mean?
So let me go to the to the project page. What I mean by a document is mostly it's not document your code or it's mostly document your design choices, right? So
but we have already done this in the other step, no?
Yes, but maybe you have changed your mind because maybe when implementing your visualization, you figure out that some choices weren't really adapted because of the distribution of the data or because of. So if you kept the exact same design choices, then it's easy. You just have to tell that there are no changes because what you had in mind was adapted, and that's it. But if you did some changes, then just document those changes and explain why you did those changes.
Okay, but you did, for example, I did a plot and I liked, but I think I had some good points and bad points. Should they document this? Like with this plot, you can see that and that, and the positive is that and negative is that, or not?
Yes, that would be good, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I got also specific questions on the project by email, and as I told you in my mail, I haven't had the time yet to go through all your questions. So I will do that this afternoon. So if there are some questions that you have already asked by email, then don't worry, I will answer them. Okay. But if you have other questions or questions of general interest, feel free to add them. Sure. Okay. So there is a question about the exam. So my plan for now is that so the 2nd of February, so that the official date for the exam, as far as I know, I will release a subject, and then you will have to do this subject. I have to discuss that with my colleagues, but I think it's easier if you do it on paper, because then you will be able to draw some graphs easily, and I think it's easier than on a computer, and it's less limited. And then at the end, you will have to take a picture of what you did and send me that by email. Because I've considered having a website like Camilo or Moodle to do the to collect your exams, but the problem is that since there are students from different universities following the lecture, I'm not sure there is a single web tool that you can all access. So email will be the at least it will work for everyone. And the next thing is about the content of the exam. If you look at previous years, so here on the web page, you have a link. You have links to the to previous year subjects. the exams had different parts. One part was some questions, some general questions about the lectures. And obviously, I won't ask such questions in the exam. Usually, there are also questions where I, so that's the case for last year exam, the question 2 and 3 are of the same kind. I give you a visualization and I ask you to make some analysis of those visualizations. So for example, there, you have a visualization about the Global Gender Gap report, where you have some value be visualized, and I ask you to tell me the visual mapping. So that's the kind of thing we have been doing, to list all the attribute in the data set and list then on which graphic variables are mapped and so on. Okay. And then, so that part is quite, it's not mechanical, but it's something you have to understand the chart and then to figure out the data and so on. And then there are parts where I ask you more to be able to criticize such kind of visualization. And criticize is not only saying that something is bad. So I ask you to explain, so in this case, what is good, what is bad, and to justify those things. It's not, oh, it's bad because it's not just tell, I don't like this, so it's bad. Or, so I want to that you be able to tell why some parts are good, or some encoding is good, or some encoding is bad. And a tool for that is the criterions that we have seen from Bertin. So we know that some graphic variables are good to encode some kind of attributes and so on. Since it will be online this year, will we have access to document during the exams? Yes, of course, yes. In some universities, online exams are the students are asked to turn on their camera so that we can have a look at them. And I won't ask you to turn on your camera. I think it's not a good thing to do. So my argument is that. Of course, you can use anything that you want. I think that in the time that you will have, it's the best way for you is just to work on your own on the subject that I will give you. I don't see how you don't have anything to gain to work with other people in the group, because as you know, the master is something competitive. So for the people interested in getting a PhD or an internship, you know that in fact it's not just having a diploma, because the diploma, most of you will get it, but it's a question of there is a ranking in the end, and the highest ranked student will get some funding for a PhD and so on. So I don't expect you to. I think people will work on their own, I think given the time that you will have organizing something to get help from an external people will be difficult for you. So at least we will have to trust you. Do we have to be online during exam? I will be online so that you can ask me questions about the subject if you need. I think, I don't know. I have to discuss that with my colleagues. I think we will ask you to be online so that we can give information to everybody. For example, if someone find a problem in the subject, and if I want to tell you there is a problem in the subject, I should be able to do that. So, yes, I think you will have to be online during the exam.
Professor, I have one more question. At the end of each like a visualization, we see the link link of some paper. Do we need to read all those papers or no? It's not necessary.
In the schedule now, for each lecture, I gave you some readings. Okay, so you are expected to read those papers during the course of the semester. I can ask question, but not a question like on very specific details, but just questions about the, or at least I will assume that you have read those papers, so I don't I won't explain if I tell in the subject that if I use a visualization like a scatter dice. So that's something that we have seen, or not tricks, that's something we have seen. And I asked you to read those papers. If I speak about not tricks, I will expect you to know what is not tricks, and I won't explain what is not tricks. Right. So just back onto one example. So of subject, so one kind of question is giving you a visualization and asking question about this visualization. So an example there is to give the visual mapping and to explain, to analyze this mapping, to give a critical analysis of the mapping. Here is another example. Again, list the attributes, give the graphical variable, so that the encoding, and give a critical analysis of the encoding. And then there are questions about the, there is a description of interaction, and I ask you some question about this this interaction. And so I think we have done this question together. And then you can you will have a question the other way around, where I describe a data set. And then I ask you to make basically what you have done in the project, except the part on the implementation. But I will ask you, give you a data set, give you maybe some questions. And then I will ask you to design a visualization and to not only to give the design for the visualization, but also to explain why you choose this design and to justify your design. Okay, and this part, justify your design. So last year it was between parents, but that wasn't a good idea because that's the part which is the more important, being able to explain why you choose this design. I hope that's one of the things that you should have learned with me this year. Okay? Just not just to design a visualization, but to have a principled ways to do that. Okay. When do we have a project presentation? So the project, we put that to next week, right? And at that time, we were still having hopes that we would be able to do it at the university, but this won't be the case, obviously. I think there's no chance now that in February, in the before February, that the university will reopen. So I have to organize that remotely. Okay, so basically, you will have to do the presentation. I will do a schedule, and you will have to do the presentation remotely. Okay. I have to find a slot for that, and the idea would be to make it next Friday. I have to check your schedule and my schedule to do that. Okay. And since I have to check. I will tell you. I can't tell you for the time it should take. The other years, people had 20 minutes, I think. But since we have more groups this year, even more groups this year, and since it will be remote, I think you will have to aim for a really shorter presentation, just to, in fact, presentation will be merely a demo of your visualization. I will rely on what you gave me for the details and for the designs and so on. And so really it will just be the presentation, a demo of your work. So I have a question about No, for the implementation, I will, for the evaluation, I will use your presentation, but also what you gave me, of course. So that the report with the code and so on. Okay. Do you want that we have a look at one of the exam exercise? It's something we could do if you want. And if you have an idea of which one. So maybe if we look at last year, maybe this one. So the question was, do you have solutions to the exam? No, there's no solution to the exam. So the description of the image is, so the image showed data from the World Economic Forum that qualified the magnitude of gender disparities and tracks the progress over time with a specific focus on the relative gaps between women and men across four key areas: health, education, economy, and politics. The data shown on the figure is the composite gender gap index. So a score of 100% right side of the chart denotes true gender equality. Okay. So let's have a look. And so there is some text. So on the horizontal axis, You have the gender gap index, obviously. So maybe I will wait a minute. I will turn that into something I can write on. Okay. This one. We have the gender gap index, and that's something quantitative, right? So if you look at the at the usual Kerr-McKinley table, you will get something like this: X, Y, Z, T, retinal, and so on. So it's quantitative and it's on the horizontal axis. On the vertical axis, it's not that obvious. And in fact, you have countries, and the countries are coded in fact, you don't have the labels for the countries. You have only for one, the one which is selected, and you have a color, but color are for regions, not just countries. So the countries, that's something nominal, and it's not on the y-axis. It's something on the So it's coded as a text, but only upon selection, right? And in fact, you have what you have on the vertical axis is if you look, countries are sorted, and they are sorted according to their gender gap index. Okay, so you have a rank which is ordered and give you the vertical position, right? And then since the data points are shown as points, we put a P in it. And then we have the continent. Which is something nominal and which is mapped onto color. And then what else do we have? So I will let you have a closer look, but we have arrows. And arrows, if you read the description there, that's the variation between 2006 and 2016. Okay. So it tells you how the countries change their gender gap index. So we have the change, and that's something quantitative. And that's, we could say it's another visualization, right? Because we already have the point there. And change is encoded as the size of the arrow. Okay. Again, that's something, so arrows are not, we have no way to tell in the table that we have arrows on the graph. So you have to add some comments, say size of the arrow or something. So keep in mind, there are details that you can't give on a such in such a table, right? So you have to add comments. You have to deal with the fact that the table is not something expressive enough to capture everything in the visualization. And if you are careful, you will see also that here you have a slider which allows to select a specific year. And then remember, how can I do that? I will move that. Or maybe I can make it smaller. Okay. You also, so you have the years, which is something quantitative or order. And remember, there were columns that can express that you have some filtering with a slider going on. Okay. Right. And I think that's it for this visualization. So in this kind of question, remember that the axes are not described. I mean, they are described in the visualization because you tell which axis is mapped and which value is, attribute is mapped on which axis. But you don't have to describe the visualization for the axis or for the visualization. For example, there is a legend telling you that there is a higher rank and lower rank toward the bottom of the graph, or the legend for the graph is not part of the. I mean, it's a part of the visualization, but you don't have to describe that part, the legend, into this table. Right? It's a kind of metadata for the visualization. The median value. That's an annotation that it's like in your data set, you. In fact, you have to consider what data you have in your table. And in your table, you have a line for each country, for each year, and so on. And the median is something you have computed elsewhere, and you have one single value for that, and it's not in the data table. It's some kind of metadata. So it's also an annotation on the visualization. I wouldn't make it into... What about the categories? So yes, there are categories, right? You're right on that. So that's the same thing as years. So it means we have, in fact, we not only have a gender gap index, we have a economic index, political index, health index, and so on. And those are not on the visualization, right? So you could tell that you have some category which is something nominal and where there is a selection. Okay. So if you want, you can add it in the table, but I ask you to describe the current visualization, so you don't have to do that. Okay. So with a selection, and add a comment that there is a selection going. Okay. So that's an example. And for the... where am I? Then the question is some coding good, bad according to Bertrand criterions? So in this case, if you look back at what we have some quantities, quantitative values that like the gender gap index, it's on a vertical axis, so that's something good. You have the rank, which is ordered on a axis, which is can represent quantitative differences, and that we could say that that may not be the best use for this axis, because we have another quantitative value, which is the change. So some may argue that since we have two quantitative values, the other quantitative value should be on the vertical axis. Still, the encoding also should depend on the question asked. So I think it's a good thing to note that there is a that could be a problem in the encoding, because we have two quantities that are not we have only two quantitative values, and they don't use two axes. But in fact, you can justify that by saying that in this graph, the order is maybe something relevant, and that's that's maybe the most the thing that you want to consider. That was maybe the focus of this visualization, to show how country compare to each other. So having the ranking on the vertical axis is maybe a good thing for that. At least there may be a justification for that. And one other possible justification is that using the size on the horizontal axis is something nice actually there, because we show a change in the gender gap index, which is already on the horizontal axis. So then we have a use of a combination of two variables, the horizontal axis, so the position, and the size. And since the size denotes a change on the vertical axis, having it on the horizontal size of the arrow is something in fact quite nice. Okay, so this kind of justification is not something that we have seen in the lecture, so it's not something that you will find in the guidelines by Bertin or by other authors, but that the kind of remarks that you can make about the visualization to explain why you find this visualization is good or bad. Okay. And I will be open to any of your justification. You don't have to only find things in the textbook. You have to make use of your judgment. Right. Okay. Thank you for the link, so that people can have a look at the interactive version. Yes. I find this visualization really interesting, and you will have there are many ways to interact with the visualization that are really, really interesting. Yeah, have a look at that. Yeah, sure. Thanks. Thanks, Marianne. Okay. So maybe we should stop there for today. I will be back with a more detailed instruction for the exam as soon as I will have discussed the matter with my colleagues, so that we are trying, in fact, to be consistent with each other, so that we have the mostly the same the same modalities for the exam. So it will take a bit of time, but I think that it will mostly be in line with what I told you today. Okay. Right. Is there other questions? Feel free. And so that that will be the last time we see each other, if I can say all together. So it was a bit special this year. I was happy to know you before we. We went online for the lecture. I hope that the lecture interests you. I'm always open to feedback. So if you have any comment, feel free to send me an email, be it something that you didn't like. I'm really open to critics, if they are, if they can help me to improve the lecture, that's a good thing for the next years. And I think you all also have ways to do that anonymously through the administration. I'm not sure for everybody of you, but still there are ways to do that, I think. So thank you everybody for your patience and for being there. And I wish you the best for this year. I wish you success in your studies and then to find some job that will fulfill your what you like and what you want to do after your studies. See you then,
Professor. Hello. I wanted to ask, like, about the internship. Do you have any other information about any internship available?
I've sent in the email today some offers.
Yes, I saw the one offer today there, but I think it is mostly about software development rather than the visualization.
Yeah, I keep sending the offers that I see. Okay.
Okay.
And there were two offers, I think, in the email. And I will have a look with colleagues. If and as I have got other offers, I will transfer to the mailing list.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye bye then.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Very much.
Bye. Thank you.
Have a good time.
Bye. Bye.